Hey, I know what'll cheer you up.
Welcome to the Bright Ideas Podcast, where we let proven experts help you to find the next bright idea to implement in your business today. And now, here's your host, Trent Deersmith.
This is unbelievable.
This true force has never been fully understood.
Hey there, Bright Idea Hunters. Welcome to the Bright Ideas Podcast. I'm your host, Trent Deersmith, and this is the podcast for business owners and marketers who want to better understand how to use online marketing and sales automation tactics to massively boost their business. On the show with me today is a fellow by the name of Dan Martell. He's the CEO and founder of Clarity, and we're going to talk about what Clarity is and why you might find it to be a whole lot of value. And we're also going to talk about some entrepreneurial stories of what Dan did before. And I think you're in for a really interesting interview. So Dan, thank you very much for making the time and welcome to the show.
Thanks, Trent. Thanks for having me.
So for the folks in my audience who don't know who you are, maybe just a quick little bit out of your mouth, who you are and what you're doing.
Yeah, so name's Dan Martell, Canadian. Born and raised. I spent the last 5 years in San Francisco. I've been an entrepreneur my whole life. I pretty much joke that I'm unemployable. I could never really work for somebody else. Started two companies when I was 18, 20 that were complete failures. So I learned a lot there. Vacation rental website and a hosting company. And then eventually when I was 24, I started a company called Spheric Technologies that was it's a service company, but we really focused on enterprise clients. So we had Dole Foods, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble's clients. And I grew that over 4 years to 30 people and got acquired in 2008. I then went to San Francisco, where I've been for the last 5 years, started a company called Flowtown, which was a marketing, social media marketing kind of application for small businesses. Raised venture capital, grew that to, I think, close to 50,000 small business customers, and then that got acquired October of 2011, and then now I'm working on Clarity, and Clarity's this crazy idea that we want to help entrepreneurs get advice from other people who have been there before, and it's over the phone, and it's kind of like eBay for business advice.
Very interesting. You and I have more in common than we thought. I'm Canadian as well. Didn't know you were.
Nice.
What part of Canada?
New Brunswick.
Oh, wow. East Coast boy.
I haven't met many people from New Brunswick. There's like four of us in all of California, I think.
Indeed. So I did want to ask, we'll get to Flowtown at the end if there's time, but I really want to talk about Clarity because I think it's when I say we have a lot in common, because with Bright Ideas, I'm trying to do the same thing, but in a very different way. So I'm very interested in your take on how you're solving a similar problem that I am attempting to solve. So where'd you get the idea from? Of all, you know, you've had two successful startups and exits and you can go and do anything you like after that. And you pick this Clarity idea. Why?
Yeah, well, I mean, I kind of built Clarity for the 18-year-old version of me, right? I mean, I was writing code in the basement in my town. You know, I consider a small town, 100,000 people. Didn't know any other entrepreneurs, especially technology entrepreneurs. And I felt like that the lack of having other people like me around was definitely what hindered me from having more success, you know, and failed the first two companies. And really is the major thing that I changed when I started Spheric and only 2 years into it. But, you know, so that idea has always been, you know, part of my DNA. You know, getting advice from smart people, been there before, helping others personally, and I know the value of that. Even if it's a 15-minute conversation, I think it could change your company, change your outcomes. And after Flowtown got acquired, you know, financially, I did really well on the Spheric outcome because I didn't raise any money, you know, venture money, and then Flowtown was a great outcome as well. And I just the filter I had was whatever I work on next, it has to have the potential to have a positive impact on a billion people within a decade. So when you start thinking of ideas that have that potential of impact plus growth and market opportunities, you know, it really comes down to communication platforms. I mean, things like Skype and Facebook and, you know, others, those are really the few. And then also something I was passionate about and a problem that I cared about and a problem that I would devote my life to. And, you know, when I thought about helping entrepreneurs and business owners, you know, grow their business or achieve their goals, I thought, that I could do that every day for the rest of my life and be happy. So, you know, Clarity's been part of my thinking for years, but it took a few companies to finally get to the point where I said, okay, it's not just about a company anymore, because I'm a builder. I'm always going to be building. It was more about the impact I think I could have and what dent I could leave on the universe. And, you know, Clarity was the one that felt absolutely perfect.
So for the folks who are listening to this who haven't been to the Clarity website yet, give a quick explanation of how the platform that you're building solves this problem, so they kind of have context for the next few questions.
Yeah, so the way we look at it is, you know, we're not an advice mentor network. We're really about, you know, throughout the day, you're you know, as an entrepreneur, you're taking on new challenges. You're doing things for the first time, things from like, you know, negotiating with your bank, you know, a line of credit, to figuring out if you should hire that key employee or bring on a business partner or set up a partnership or whatnot. And, you know, for me, the way I like to do things is, once I know I have kind of this challenge, this new thing I'm about to do, is I want to talk to people who've done it before and talk to two or three different people so I can get some perspective and give them my context so that their feedback is on target to what I'm doing and who I am and what I've done in the past, and then make decisions. And, you know, we just think Clarity, so when you go to the website, you can search for different experts. We have over 10,000 experts now on different topics, from financing to marketing to business development to, I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, you can search Google. We have people who work at Google. We have guys like Mark Cuban, who's a billionaire. We've got the world's, you know, 1,000 angel investors and VCs. I mean, it's pretty amazing, the breadth of people. So you can search their profiles, and then whoever you feel like it would be a good fit, you can request a call with them. They charge a rate for that time. It's based per minute. You schedule a call through Clarity. There's a conference line that's given to you when the call is scheduled for. You call in, you talk, and when you hang up, you get billed. The person gets paid. Many of the experts that obviously don't do it for money, they donate to charity. Mm-hmm. So not only are you getting the advice you need, you're donating to their charity of their choice, and it's just a win-win thing. And, you know, we launched publicly in May of last year. We've done over 13,000 calls, and we're growing pretty awesomely right now.
Mark Cuban charges $166.67 a minute. Is there anyone charging more than him?
Yeah, we have guys. I mean, it's an open market, right? So we have, I think there's one user I found, it's 50,000. Sometimes I feel like they just do that for fun. Like, you know, they're signing up and they put it in there. Obviously, our search ranking is based on responsiveness, reviews, ratings, profile completeness. So, you know, some of those guys won't even show up in search if they're not actively taking calls and being serious and whatnot. But it's cool. Mark's gotten a couple dozen call requests.
So out of all the ways that you could try and connect people that need advice with people who have the ability to give good advice, why did you choose this particular model? Was this something that you saw somewhere else? Did you think this up on your whiteboard? What made you go this way?
I mean, like most ideas, what you see today isn't what it started off. The first version of Clarity was me. So after we got acquired, you know, I started getting a bunch of emails. So once the press goes out, people, you've probably been in a situation, people just start emailing you, hey, do you have 5 minutes for coffee, et cetera. And it's probably the Canadian in me that just felt like I got to respond to these people. I suck at long emails. Like, you send me a long email and I'll just write back and say, how can I help? Because I just can't. I just don't do that. My brain doesn't work that way. But I love to talk. So I built this form that people could add themselves to, and it was just their name and their number and then what they want to talk about, and it would add them to my call list. Mm-hmm. And when I was free, I would open up my phone, I hit start calls, and if I was walking between meetings, it would just dial everybody back privately. It would, you know, keep my number private, would call them, read to me what they wanted to talk about, and then if they were free, they'd answer and we'd talk. And it was pretty cool. And that was it. There wasn't no grand vision then. It was just like, I had a problem, I built a prototype in a week. It solved it. And what happened is I started tweeting it out on Twitter, and people started, not only, like, it was cool because I was talking to people all over the world using this link, and people started asking me if they could use it as well for giving advice and scheduling calls. And that's when the pieces started to connect that, you know, I've always had a passion for helping entrepreneurs, and especially around advice, but this is a potential way to do it. I like the phone because it's, you know, it's not geographically constrained. I like that people have to be specific about what they want to talk about beforehand, so you know exactly what the need is and how you can be helpful. And then we keep everything private, you know, so that nobody ends up calling you on a Sunday night at 4 in the morning or whatnot. You know, so we really respect both parties' privacy on that front.
There was some pretty profound stuff in your answer there, and I want to feed it back because I want people to really understand something that I think is critically important. With your startup, you took a week to build a prototype. So you were basically, quote unquote, in the business of being able to get feedback with almost no money in a week of your time. So if at that point all you heard was crickets, you're thinking, this isn't worth going anywhere. And you didn't have to sink a bunch of money in and you didn't have to put a bunch of time in. But on the other hand, you did get the feedback based upon what you had built. And so that pretty much told you, hey, you got to keep going. My point is that especially with technology and the internet now, pick something where you can fail fast and fail cheap. Because people who've listened to past interviews will know I never get it right the first time ever. And it sounds like, you know, your experience has been, you know, probably the same.
Yeah. And the other filter was that even if nobody else cared about it, I had a solution to my problem.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like those are the best ideas where even if you're the only customer, your life is better because of it. Mm-hmm. So, I've always built companies that way. You know, I after the first two failures, I realized I can't solve somebody else's problem. And I don't want to spend a lot of time and money into mm-hmm. every good idea I have, because you'd go broke pretty quick if you did that. Mm-hmm. And then if there's a glimmer of something there, then you can just kind of peel back the onion and see what else is there. And then at the end of the day, you're not committing to anybody of pursuing it, but you get really great customer feedback and validation.
So how did you go from, so when you had that prototype that you'd spent a week building and some people, you think you tweeted it out, how many users did that result in when you said, yeah, you guys can use this too? What did that look like?
So the initial call volume is what surprised me. So I tweeted it out, you know, once every other day, and all of a sudden I was doing, you know, the cool part was I was doing 25. One night I remember I was on the roof of my apartment building and I did probably 2.5 hours of calls. Because the way it works is I tweeted out, people add them to the list, it would go on my list, and as long as I was still on the app calling, it would just cycle to the next person.
Yeah. So you're not having to dial the phone or
no, it was hands free, and it was dialing entrepreneurs from all over the world, and it would tell me what they want to talk about, and they were blown out of their mind that I was calling them, and it was just this really magical, awesome experience, and I just thought, this is cool. And then mm-hmm. when people started asking me, I mean, within the first month, I think we probably signed up like 75. Well, I had to rewrite the code. So first off, it didn't support multiple accounts. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I started getting requests for can I use this? Then I said, well, what's the easiest way to do that? So I supported multiple accounts by Facebook Connect. So the first version of Clarity was Facebook Connect, cell phone number, that was it. Mm-hmm. That's how you create an account. And then you had a profile page with a form and you could tweet it out. But you know, we added probably 75 people within the first 2 weeks once I rewrote the code. And then within the next month, we added almost 1,000.
And how did
I knew there was something going on.
Yeah, how did that happen? What did you do to get those extra 1,000 people on board?
Well, the product itself works that way. So I have a Clarity profile. I tweet it out. Somebody else signs up to call me. They sign up. Mm-hmm. They get a profile. They might share it out. And then it just keeps going. It's kind of like Hotmail and email, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, all of our experts were sharing their links in their emails and Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And then people would sign up and ask for accounts. So. So you know, luckily, we had a product that had a shareable experience.
How long now did you start generating revenue right away, or when did you decide to put a revenue model into this?
No, I mean, like most things, the revenue model was a happenstance. It was just people. We ended up getting some really notable people. In the first version of Clarity, there was no search, there was no directory. So unless you knew the person's link, you didn't know who was on Clarity. Yeah. And somebody got really smart and started hacking the URLs and would start guessing all the different usernames based on Twitter of my friends that might be on Clarity. And all of a sudden, really important people were getting call requests from people they didn't know. And that was not how they were using Clarity. They never meant to share it out. So a few of them asked me if they could start charging for that time. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, but it's not really in line with, you know, what I wanted to build. But I thought, well, if you could charge for it and then donate to charity, then that is more like that works for me. Mm-hmm. I would be okay with that. So it probably took another 4 weeks to kind of build that out. And then we started generating revenue in January of last year. Again, we didn't open up publicly until May where anybody could sign up. It was very mm-hmm. much like a friends and like personal friends mm-hmm. kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And within the first month of January, we did 4,000 in revenue. And that was when I was like, all right, stop everything I'm doing. I'm doing this full time. Crazy story is I was working at the company that acquired Flowtown, mm-hmm. working on Clarity nights and weekends, and I got them to agree that I could do it and sign all the paperwork. But I had only been there 3 months, and I walked away from my earnout because I didn't want to stay. I really wanted to work on Clarity.
Now, when you say 4,000, was that 4,000? Was that Clarity's cut of the revenue generated?
No, gross revenue.
That was gross revenue. Okay.
Yeah.
What did it do last month?
We don't talk about revenues.
But
only first month to give you a glimpse.
Yeah.
That was kind of like kind of what I needed to see to feel like there was something there.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. So you're happily going along. You're getting traction really quickly. Have you had any big potholes along the way, big challenges that you didn't see?
100%. I mean, there's so many. We deal with them every day. It's just, probably the most obvious one is we didn't have a director of search. So I think by the time we added a director of search, we were about 3,000 or 4,000 members. But there was never an agreement when you signed up for Clarity that you would be in a directory or search, mm-hmm. right? So we had to retool the membership and explain to people. And then for the longest time, there was no scheduling. So there was no, like, I request a call with you and we scheduled. It was, I add myself to your call list and whenever you're free, you call me back. Now you got to understand, we've done calls across 50 plus countries. So time zones play a really funky role in all this. Mm-hmm. So that was another 6 months before we found the time and figured out how to do scheduling, right? Because it's probably the hardest problem to solve on the internet. Mm-hmm. So those were two big ones. And then more recently was deciding to not do free calls anymore. 94% of our calls were free. And, you know, so they were costing us money. They weren't making us money. Out of all of the worst rated calls and no shows, they were all free calls. Mm-hmm. Most of the paid calls were always great calls, great experts. So, you know, that was just a month ago, right? That was a big, like, hey guys, if we really want to build a billion-dollar company, we got to start tweaking things because the business model doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And it's constant. I think if you're trying to do something, you know, really interesting and impactful, you always have to kind of revalidate your assumptions.
Was there a lot of pushback when you went to the no more free calls?
100%. There was huge pushback. That was probably, I have a blog post ready to go called "Don't Punch Your Users in the Feeling," because that's exactly what we did. We hurt people's feelings. So we did two things. We stopped allowing for free calls, and we also segmented our users into members and experts. Mm-hmm. So for a while, if you signed up, you had the potential to be both. You mm-hmm. had a profile, but you could also, so you were in the search in the directory, and we had to essentially manually go through all the, not manually, but with some kind of algorithms and scripts to look at profile data and keywords and whatnot. We had to decide who was going to be an expert and who was going to be a member. Mm-hmm. And there was definitely people that felt like they had value to give, that they should have been in our public directory, that we essentially send an email. Now, luckily we test our email. So I only sent it to 1500 people mm-hmm. before I realized that it was really insensitive of me mm-hmm. and we tweaked the messaging. But yeah, those are hard. I mean, any mm-hmm. marketplace, it's the first time I've ever built a marketplace, and it's the most interesting thing to create because you have two customers that both need to be satisfied, mm-hmm. right? Two-sided markets. I don't care, buyers, sellers. You have two different types of customers that have different needs, so it makes it twice as hard.
So when someone signs up now, which I did about an hour before this interview, and I already don't remember whether or not I had the option of making myself available to receive calls, or is what has to happen for someone to be able to do that?
We actually took, when we did that 2 weeks ago, when we reset organized our community, we took the become an expert off because mm-hmm. we wanted to rework it. So instead of waiting till that was good and doing it, we wanted to get the change done. So you can sign up to become a member. And then once we launch the become an expert, then we're going to email all the members that are new to Clarity since we took it off and they can apply to become an expert.
Got it. Because, you know, naturally, I'm curious if there's anybody in my audience that would like to talk to me. And
I know for sure there is. It's a great, I know from experience, it's a really cool experience as well.
Yeah. Never seen anything like this before. So interesting. All right. What would you say of the challenges that you experienced? What was the most difficult one? Or is that the one that you just explained?
In Clarity or as an entrepreneur?
Let's do both. Let's do Clarity first and then we'll shift.
Clarity, the hardest challenge. I think it's always people, like recruiting. I mean, I recently did an interview with the new local newspaper. He's asking me about like universities and, you know, recent grads and whatnot. And he's like asking me how many recent grads we hire. And I say, well, I don't hire anybody that that needs a job. And he's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, I only hire people that are gainfully employed and that are absolutely brilliant and are essentially the smartest people at other companies. And I want them to come work on my idea. And he's like, wow, that's a good idea. And I'm like, I don't know why you would hire any differently. That's how I've been for the last two companies. And I think it's a major part. So recruiting is really tough. Like hiring that caliber of individual for, you know, senior roles from design to development to marketing. That's always going to be the toughest thing. We're a small team right now. We're only six people because of that. And, you know, we raised $1.6 million in funding. We announced it last December. So we, it's not because of the capital. It's really, I'm only going to build and grow as fast as I can hire great people. Because I know the first 12 employees will make or break a company. And then, so that's been the toughest with Clarity. And then the toughest in my life was probably, you know, when we were building Flowtown, you know, there's kind of this crazy story. And if you want to learn more, you can go to just Google Flowtown down the rabbit hole. But essentially, we built a product, launched it. It finally hit. It grew like this. We were doing like 100 and almost 100,000 a month in recurring revenue in 11 months. We raised venture capital from guys like Mitch Kapor and Dave McClure and all these guys. And then we get an email from Facebook saying what we were doing was no longer allowed based on their terms of service. So boom, shut down. Done. Yeah. So essentially, imagine you actually finally figure it out. You build the company up, you're ready to raise more money. Like we're having meetings with VCs, and then we get an email saying what you're doing today has to stop. And that really sucked. I had a co-founder, Ethan, and it was his first company, but it had been mine, and I'd, you know, had issues in other companies. So we just did what I knew was right, was cut deep and cut fast. Like get rid of, essentially we're starting from scratch. So, you know, we have to get the team back to, you know, three or four guys in the basement building product. And we went to the whiteboard, prototyped three different ideas, you know, quickly iterated within a month on each one of them. Within 1 month, we like broke up into teams, put out three different ideas, finally figured one that worked great. And then we grew that company or that product back up and then got acquired. So, but that moment, that day, I remember my fiance at the time, Renee, she goes like, man, are you okay? And I'm like, I don't know what to think. Like it was just such a nuclear explosion. I just couldn't believe it, but I wasn't going to pretend like it wasn't happening and stare into the light. But it was definitely like, I can't think of anything worse. You everything you build in your company and it's going great and you think everything's awesome to just come in and have it taken from underneath you. I don't wish that on anybody.
Yeah, that's kind of a big problem, which is a great segue because now I want to talk more just about this, your journey as an entrepreneur, because I know that a large portion of my audience are entrepreneurs. When you have something that's that gnarly that happens to you, I think the difference between entrepreneurs and, that's not the right way to describe it. What I'm getting at is this. Something happens in a successful person's head that allows them to keep moving forward. And then there are other people who are defeated by that. And they stop, they give up, they do something else, they go get a job, whatever it is, they don't keep moving forward. Can you think about that example? What happens for you? Like, do you have a process that you go through? Do you have like a pity party for a day? And then do you write down all the various things you could do to move forward? Or is it just like innately part of you because of the way your parents raised you? What's going on upstairs so that you don't go and suck your thumb in the easy chair in front of the TV?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like you do get down. Like, I'm not going to stand here and act all like, oh, I wasn't worried, blah, blah, blah. Like, I know when shit's not, when things aren't going good, because I pretty much just watch TV and I don't own a TV. So I have to like download iTunes movies or something and just watch them. Like I need to tune out, and it's not because I'm not wanting to face it. And like you said, it's not a pity party, but for like a day, I just need to turn my brain off and just like do something else because it is bad. Right. And you just don't want that to eat up. Like I don't want to get in my head. So it's kind of like, I just want to do nothing. But then you know, as soon as I give myself that kind of day to kind of feel that way, and it's never longer because I'm not going to be that guy. It's being grateful for having, you know, I remember Oprah said it best, you know, when she was getting sued for like $110 million, she said like, I'm grateful to be in that kind of position. Like, yeah. Think about it. She's being sued for $110 million means that she had more than that.
Yeah.
Right. Or she had it. Like, she was grateful for being able to be presented with those kind of challenges. And, you know, I was not going to complain. We had money in the bank. We had a great brand. I felt we had customers that were just waiting for us to build something else. And I knew that when the chips are down, those are the moments when I get the opportunity to show my customers and my investors how I react. And I think that is my, like, you know, I'm just like, push me against, like, I always, like, if you push me against a rock, I'm going to come out fighting. Like, that's just who I am. Maybe it's, like you said, the way my parents raised me, but I know that those things happen, and it's my opportunity to show the world that this is why I feel like I'm a really great entrepreneur. Like, I mean.
So what advice for someone, there's probably someone listening to this right now who's dealing with a big challenge. And maybe their parents didn't do as good of a job, so they don't have that innate sense of resilience that other entrepreneurs have. Is there any advice that you can think of that you would give to that person on some actual, okay, when this happens and you're feeling like you want to give up, go read this book or this blog or watch this movie. Is there anything you've got?
Yeah, well, I will say, first off, I love my parents, great relationship with them. They didn't raise me this way. I believe that some of the best entrepreneurs out there went through chaos growing up, and I definitely have my story. And it's it's the result of that that makes me okay with chaotic moments as an entrepreneur. Yeah. And if you've had that in your life, I think you have an advantage that you should embrace and don't shy away from it. But yeah, so things I do is I make sure I work out. Like, I just know that when I work out, my brain works better, I think better. So that's like step one. If I hadn't been to the gym in a while, I'll start on that routine. If I'm running, I listen to audiobooks, you know, things not like I used to listen to Tony Robbins, but now I feel like there's, you know, I'm kind of past the personal empowerment stuff and more into like the specific tactical autobiographies. Like, I get really inspired reading autobiographies of Thomas Jefferson or obviously Steve Jobs and those kind of guys. So really great content to fill your brain, make sure your body's healthy, and then do what, you know, honestly, I don't want to plug Clarity, but do that, like find people that are in a similar position or have been through a similar position as you and ask them for their advice. And sometimes it's not because you want them to tell you what to do. You just want to know that you're not alone. I think that's the most important thing that we forget as entrepreneurs is, you know, it's lonely as heck. Like, it just feels like nobody understands what I'm going through. Nobody's been through this before. And there's nothing more liberating and empowering than talking to somebody that says, wow, I actually did that happened exactly to me, or I felt the exact same way you're describing. Here's what I did. If it worked for you, great. If not, whatever. But just having that personal connection, I think, is really powerful. And that's what I've always done is, you know, I want to talk to somebody who's been through it, because here's the question I always ask myself anytime I'm about to do something that's scary as heck, right? Has anybody in the world ever done this before? And as long as the answer is yes, I can do it. I don't need to have ever done it. I don't need to know how to do it. I don't need to know anything else. I don't need to have resources. All I need to know is if anybody else in the world has done this before, raised capital, hired key CTOs, whatever it is, come back from being shut down, then I know there's a way to do it. I just got to figure out how to do it. So, you know, I feel like that question is empowering. Every time an entrepreneur is like, I don't know what to do, I'm like, well, first off, you have to believe that it's possible. So by asking that question, it usually opens your brain up to the possibilities. And then you take the probability, like, what do you think those people did? And you just make a list. Because it's weird how our brains are programmed to, like, dismiss things because they're hard or they're scary. But if you actually just kind of brainstorm on somebody else's behalf, all those good ideas, all those great pieces of advice come out.
Yeah, no kidding. All right. I want to talk now a little bit about fundraising. Seems to be a theme in some of my last interviews. And I know that when I ran my service business, I had a little bit of success at raising funds, but not a ton. And some of the guests I've had on here, different business, obviously the business model that you're using has a huge impact on your ability or lack thereof to raise money. What was the experience like? Now you raised money for Clarity. Did you raise for Flowtown as well?
Yeah.
Did you raise for Sphere?
No.
No, because Sphere was predominantly no IP service business.
Yeah, it was service business.
Okay. Anyone who doesn't know what IP, what I mean by IP, intellectual property. People who invest in businesses tend to like to see some kind of defendable intellectual property. So let's go back to either or, Clarity or Flowtown. Let's do Clarity because it is such a unique and it's so young and it's a unique model. How did you go about raising the money? Did you go to people that had been invested in your previous business or where did you go?
Yeah, I think, well, let's do the Flowtown one. And the reason why is because if you raise money and you make people money, you can raise more money.
Yeah.
So that Clarity is not fair because I had already raised money for Flowtown and made my investors money. So when you're doing your next startup,
they all came back to the table and said, hey, you're a smart guy.
It's a no-brainer. Yeah. I mean, the social proof's there.
Yeah.
You know, okay. But for Flowtown was the first time and we almost didn't. I mean, you know, I think the biggest thing, Trent, you mentioned is like, you have to be building a venture backable company, right? And venture backable means potential for $100 million in revenue in 7 years. And that's why service companies traditionally aren't that venture backable because they are, they're not scalable at the same speed. Like I could add 10,000 clients tomorrow to Clarity and nothing would change. The product would work. Adding 10,000 customers, your service business, it would probably blow up on itself and you'd have a lot of upset customers. So you gotta figure out, are you building that kind of company? Do you, and if you do raise money, realize that your only outcome is either success or failure. There's no going sideways. There's no building $1 million, $2 million a year business. There's no, there's no really building a $25 million a year business. Like they either want a return or shut down. Like investors hate having investments where they go sideways. They call those like walking dead, where they're not dying, but they're growing like 10% a year. And it screws up the way they do their, because the way they do is they invest in funds and their fund has to like be done after 7 years. So if they invest in you and you're still going and you haven't gone public or got acquired, it's really bad for them. I think that's the first thing you need to do as an entrepreneur is, do I want to build that kind of company? It's a different trajectory. It's a different outcome. And then the way we did it is, and I've given this advice a lot of times on Clarity, and I haven't written a blog post about it, but maybe I will. I don't know. It's lengthy, but the short version is, find entrepreneurs that have raised money in the market you're building your company in, right? So if you're like a daily deal site, maybe e-commerce. If you're a Clarity expert network, maybe a marketplace. If you're a marketing SaaS product, obviously other marketing SaaS companies. And find out who invested in them in their seed rounds and ideally geographically constrained. Like if you're in San Francisco, it's best to raise from people in San Francisco. If you're in Chicago, et cetera, you know, find other local companies like yours that have raised money. If you can't find somebody in your industry or your space, then you'll want to just find anybody that's raised money. Like, you know, maybe there's not a lot, right? In Boca Raton, Florida or whatever. So, you always talk to those entrepreneurs, ask them for advice. And the way to do it is really simple. You know, there's a saying that says, ask for advice, get money, ask for money, get advice. And it works for everything in life. I use it for recruiting. So asking these entrepreneurs the question like, hey, I'm working on this company. Here's what we've done so far. I'm just wondering, we've been approached by other investors and I'm wondering if we should raise money or not. I'd love to get your advice. That's the email, cold email. And obviously you need to have done something. You have a website, you have customers, you have like investors won't invest in a first time entrepreneur that have none of those. Mm-hmm. Like you just can't, right? Like guys on the back of a napkin, it's guys like, you know, Elon Musk that, you know, like you just don't do that if you're just a first time entrepreneur. So, you know, build some traction and then make a list of all those entrepreneurs. And it's very much like a sales pipeline. Like we had a spreadsheet, me and my co-founder, Ethan, we made a list of all those entrepreneurs. We reached out to them. We knew the two investors that invested in their seed round that we would have liked to get an intro from. We met with them. We explained to them what we've built. If they got excited and they said the magical words, how can I help? Then we would say, hey, I'd love an introduction to this guy and this guy. If possible, I'll follow up with an email so you can use that, copy and paste it to make the introduction. And all of our introductions were done through the entrepreneurs that we got advice with. So that's nice. The process, and it's lengthy. It could take 3 to 4 months to kind of get through it. And the one thing I will say is, once you start, you pretty much do nothing but fundraise. Don't half-ass it. Like, don't start and not, like, some people start and they're kind of raising, and it's kind of like fruit. As soon as it's out, it can go bad. So if you start fundraising now and you reach out to me and we don't talk, and then 6 months later you reach out and you say, we're still fundraising, I'm just going to be like, nobody else invested, so I'm just going to quick no, yeah. Right? So you want to build momentum. So there's a lot of prep work you can do where you say, I'm not raising, I'm thinking about it, what's your advice? And then you get all the intros to the investors and you just say, hey, I'll circle back when I'm free or when timing's better. Mm-hmm. And they hate that because they're like, what if I don't talk to you and you raise money from somebody else? Because, you know, the one thing I tell entrepreneurs all the time is, investors don't have a job if you don't create companies. Mm-hmm. And don't forget that. Like, don't pretend like you need them. They need you. They don't have a job if you don't build companies. And they want to know that they can't have you. It's very much like the dating kind of thing. But always introductions, and then it's a numbers game. So 75 investors to maybe raise from 12.
So what do you think because one of the areas of conflict that I had with my ex-management team is that they wanted to keep this lifestyle business, and I didn't. When you're in technology, there is no lifestyle business. You know, you need to have a definitive outcome in mind, definitive, because that's your window, and too many things can change, too much risk, and you could end up with nothing. So what do you think for people who are kind of on the fence, they're like, well, maybe this could be a lifestyle business. Maybe I want to attempt to raise money. What's some of the downsides of taking investor dollars into your company? Because everyone gets all excited. Oh, you know, we raised $5 million. It's great, but it's not always great.
Well, I mean, the upside. So here's the thing. You build your own company, raise no money, and you own, let's say you're a majority owner. Like I was in Sphere. I became a millionaire when I was 27. If I raised money, I would have been paying myself market rate salaries, right? Maybe let's say, you know, I never see entrepreneurs pay themselves this much, but let's say 100 grand a year, right? You raise venture capital, right? 1.6 million Clarity. Trust me, I don't pay myself 100 grand a year because it'd be an insult to my investors. So you're kind of capped. And the only mm-hmm. outcome financially is a big outcome or nothing, like zero. Mm-hmm. And trust me, like, you meet like these guys that have raised money and they didn't have success, or they got acquired by Google, but it was really just an acqui-hire, and they don't have any money. Mm-hmm. Like they just, because they bootstrapped the beginning. So they took all their own personal capital, they put in the company. When they raised money, the money went into the business. They paid themselves below market rate salaries, what they probably could have got at Google or Facebook or whatever. And then they didn't have a good outcome. So there was no money. Mm-hmm. So that's 95% of the companies are going to end up there that raise capital, VC. And if you do your own thing, you know, you can build a service company. I mean, first year, I think we did, you know, almost 800,000 in revenue, and we had 30% margins. That was pretty cool at 25 years old. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just think they're just different. Like, you know, I'm not sure that most people could achieve those kind of numbers in their first year, but it's possible. And it's yours, and you get to keep it. And then as you're doing that, if you feel like they're, you know, what I see a lot of times, a lot of companies, great companies, come from service companies. So FreshBooks started off as a consulting company. Hootsuite was a consulting company. And as they're doing the consulting, they see these problems that they're solving, you know, these mm-hmm. patterns for multiple customers. And then from that, they might spin out a product company that's venture backable. And then the CEO would go out and do that. And then there would be equity involved in there for the founding team here, and they keep running the service company. I think that's probably more natural if you want, but mm-hmm. You know, to each is their own, but there's definitely the upside of doing your own thing in a lifestyle is you can actually live a great lifestyle earlier on. Mm-hmm. Raising venture capital, you're poor. Like my co-founder, Ethan, I had made money with Sphere when we started Flowtown. Like he was on food stamps. Mm-hmm. I remember he went to get insurance for his car, and his title was CEO, and the insurance people thought he was doing fraudulent transactions because they couldn't understand how somebody that was CEO is only making 40 grand a year, right? But that's it's not glamorous, and I think people forget that. So there's definitely the pros and cons.
Yeah, and that's why I asked that question. because I've talked to many people on both sides of the fence, and there's a whole lot of sex appeal about this thing about raising money. But boy, oh boy, you better be, once you invite them into your bed, they're not going to leave.
You can't do it for the money. Yeah. They're only going to be happy when they make 10 times a return, and anything less than they won't let you do it. Like, people don't understand that. Like, you raise venture capital, and if you don't have the upper hand as an entrepreneur, they control your company. If you're not performing, they'll kick you out. Last 3 years of your life for nothing, zero. It's crazy.
Big upside, but big, big risk. You could become an unemployed ex-employee with no stock pretty quick.
Very quick.
All right. I'm going to finish up now because we're closing in on the hour. Dan, a couple, three questions. What are you most excited about for this year?
For this year, clarity-wise, or just in general?
Let's go both.
Both. In general, I'm having my second child. So I had a newborn 5.5 months ago. Mm-hmm. And we're actually having another one 7 days before his first birthday. So as a new father and gonna having another one, I'm like, it's the coolest thing in the world. I've never been happier. It's like, it's amazing. So that's exciting. A lot of great conferences coming up. So South By, I'm going to a lot of speaking stuff that I'm doing, Future of Insights in Vegas. People and learning and meeting. You know, I have this rule. It's 40 years, not 15 minutes. When I meet people like yourself, Trent, or others, I look at it as a 40-year relationship. Like, mm-hmm. It's not, I met you at a conference and that's it. Like, I like getting to know people that I like and keeping in contact. I travel a lot, so I'm fortunate to be able to keep in contact. Mm-hmm. And then with Clarity, it's we're working on I'm not supposed to say. Anyways, can't say.
But a thing.
But we're working on a lot of new stuff, and our number one priority is to get you on the best call with the right person as fast as possible, as many people as you want to talk to. Like, I really think that Clarity's magic happens when you do a call. So we got to do everything we can to help experts get on a call as fast as possible, so get demand for them. And then also, if you sign up, get you on a call, so introduce you to people, recommend people, et cetera, et cetera. Because once that happens, everybody that has calls, they're just lifetime customers. And so we're doing a lot of really neat things to help that process that we'll be launching in the next few months. And, you know, we're still on our way to achieve, you know, 1 billion people impact within a decade. So we're a year in, and our goal is 100 million entrepreneurs every year using Clarity. So we got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, no kidding. What books are you reading, or what book are you reading right now?
I'll actually show you. I listen to a lot of audio books. So I just finished Peter Diamandis' book, Abundance. It's awesome. It's probably it's a top book, like top 25 of my life, but top book of the year last year. And then I am also reading, I'm reading a book on presentations by Steve Jobs, which I usually don't buy because I feel like people just steal off of his stuff. So Secrets of Steve Jobs Presentations, and another book called The Power of Habits, Why We Do What We Do by Charles Duhigg. So yeah, I like to listen to books because I run a lot, and it works out really well.
And if people want to get a hold of you, just give me one way that's the best way for them to do that.
Dan@clarity.fm.
There we go.
Just don't put that on a webpage, but anybody listening to this, secret access. I read all my emails and I do respond. Just keep them short. And I'd love to hear from you.
All right, Dan, thank you so much for being on the Bright Ideas podcast. It's been a pleasure. You can come back anytime you like.
Really appreciate it, Trent.
All right, if you'd like to get to the show notes from today's episode, head over to brightideas.co/32. And if you run a marketing agency and you'd like to get access to this year's 2013 Marketing Agency Industry Report produced by Bright Ideas, head over to brightideas.co/2013report, and you'll be able to get access to it there. And finally, if you really enjoyed this episode, please do me a favor, head over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating and some comments, because the more ratings that we get for the show in iTunes, the higher iTunes pushes it up in its categories, and the more people that can discover the Bright Ideas podcast, and therefore the more people we can help. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. I'm your host, Trent Dearsmid, and I look forward to seeing you in an upcoming episode. Take care.
Thanks very much for listening to the Bright Ideas Podcast. Check us out on the web at brightideas.co.
All right, show's over. I'm tired.